Okay. Well, you and I need to talk after this session.
Coax scares me. I can get away with
a session on connectors if we can hear me. So,
bought the equipment. I just think.
All right. So this is a little different session than a lot of usually happen. A lot of sessions where people are talking about stuff that they know about, because I didn't know anything about this when I started. I just really was interested in how on earth does WSJT work? How do these modes dig signals out from below the noise level? How on earth does that happen?
Magic.
And I
yes.
Okay. So I started basically doing AI research and asking questions. And the nice thing about that is you can continue to ask questions. So it had come up and say, well, it uses Reed-Solomon coding. What is Reed-Solomon encoded? FT8 uses 8 tones. What are they? And I just iterated and iterated and iterated until I finally got to where I understood the stuff. And, you know, as far as I wanted to know. Hopefully that's as far as you guys want to know. By the way, I said this in my president article. I said it on Wednesday night. This is not a session on how to use FT8. Okay. You want to know about how to use FT8? Steve Farney's sitting back there. He's doing Zoom sessions on it. And Steve's going to do far better at that stuff than I am. This is basically how it works under the covers, not actually how to use it.
March 16th and March 23rd on Monday night.
There you go. There you go. So then I started dumping stuff into various AI tools, and you'll see most of this presentation came out of different AI tools I used. If you're interested, a tool called Notebook LM, where you can dump information into it, and it will only use the sources that you've given it, so it doesn't hallucinate, and it will tell you if it doesn't know something, which is different from some of the other tools, and that created some of the graphics in here. And then I found out that Claude from Anthropic, which is the company that got into the pissing contest with the Department of Defense, can read and write PowerPoint. So I started dumping some of that in. So most of this stuff came straight out of AI. And the title came out of straight AI too, by the way, The Magic of WSJT. But if anybody, who remembers Arthur C. Clarke, a science fiction author from the 70s? You remember what Clarke's third law is? So he wrote a book called Profiles of the Future, which is a really fascinating book about why things like Galileo and the Pope happened, and why the Pope didn't have the imagination to understand that the center of the universe wasn't the Earth. But there were three laws that he came up with, and I forget the first two, but the third one was any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, this is advanced technology, and if you don't understand it, it is indistinguishable from magic. So I thought that actually made a lot of sense. Yeah. So, anyhow, here's what we're doing. This is what WSJT is. It was developed by Joe Taylor. Most of you guys know most of this stuff. FT8 is sensitive down to -26 dB. It uses a narrow bandwidth, and this is what, you know, some of the basic points about WSJT and Joe and stuff like that, and how does it get into. So how does this stuff work? This is the summary of how does this stuff work, and then everything else in the presentation is how is it implemented in things like FT8, which is very different. I haven't used FT8 a lot, but I've used Q65, which we use for moonbounds, which is very different from FT8. I've used MSK144, which is what we use for meteor scatter, which is very different from the other two. And then Whisper, which Mike and I used on the balloons, and you had a Whisper signal, I think, from, you know, an antenna was in your on the ground.
Yes.
It was picked up in Australia on 100 milliwatts or less. How the hell does that work? So that's all very different. So this is basically the real quick summary of this stuff. One is narrow bandwidth. Most of these things are using a very narrow bandwidth. The narrower your bandwidth, the more noise you cut out. Okay, it's like the bandpass filters. If you're running CW, you can run a bandpass filter down to like 500 hertz or something like that and cut out all the noise that's on either side on single sideband. You need a 2.5 kilohertz wide filter to be able to fit in the signal. So the more you squeeze the bandpass down, the more noise you'll eliminate, right? So that's kind of number one. This is kind of the second one that really made a difference. long integration time. A lot of these signals are long. Okay, Q65 can be a 60-second transmission. Whisper is, I think, a two-minute transmission.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Noise is random. Anything that's random can be averaged out. So if you throw a die, you know, a whole bunch of times, okay, it's going to average 3.5. Right? It always is, because all the numbers from 1 to 6 have an equal probability of coming out. If you throw them, they're going to average 3.5. Let's do the same thing with noise. Okay? So I was going to draw a diagram on the screen, but suppose we know in any of these transmissions that we're sending a 3-letter transmission, J-O-M. So character number 1 is a J, character number 2 is an O, character number 3 is an N, character number 4 is a J, character number 5 is an O, character number 6 is an N. So characters 1 and 4 are the same character. All right. So we decode characters 1 and 4. What's the same about them? The character. What's different about them? Noise. Anything that's different between 1 and 4, we can take out. And what's left is the character that we're sending. Kind of cool, huh? And you do that a whole bunch of times, and then you could lose character number 4, but you've got character number 7 because it was a static burst, a balloon move, or a plane flew in front of you, or something like that. But that's the thing that kind of got to me, is that noise is random, and the longer you have a sequence of anything that's random, the more you can average it out. Okay, and what's left is your signal. So that's why these transmissions are as long as they are. And the shorter they get, the less good they are. So FT4 isn't as good as FT8. FT2 isn't as good as FT4. Okay, advantages are shorter. Disadvantages, you lose your minimum signal to noise ratio. So that was kind of one of the major aha moments when it developed that point number 2, when I said, wait a second, now I start to kind of get the idea. The longer you listen to noise, the more it's going to average out. Law of large numbers applies there. Okay. That's number 2. Number 3 is a structured format. Especially at FT8, you know that it's a structured format. Everything's got to be a certain way. The call sign is going to be in a certain position, and it's going to have a certain format. An FT8 call sign is got to be 2, 1, and 3. Okay. And it will prepend, if you've got like a K2 call or something like that, it'll stick a space in the front. So it's always 2 letters, 1 number, 3 letters. Only one, it can, the third character can only be a number. First 2 characters have to be letters. Last 3 characters have to be letters. And there can't be anything after that, which is what I found when I went down to the Cayman Islands and tried to operate my little ZBitX radio as WB2MNF/PJ4. And it threw out the PJ4. Because it's not part of the normal sequence. So it knows what's possible in each position. Okay. And that adds an awful lot of intelligence to decoding it. So that's number 3. Number 4 is basically redundancy. Okay. And this was kind of an enlightening moment when I was looking at the packet radio session last time. Last time, we send one copy of the message. The receiving station acknowledges it, and we send it again if we didn't get it. There's no acknowledgments in any of this stuff. They basically pack more and more and more copies of the same information into the packet. So if the first J gets knocked out, the second J will get picked up. So it's basically stuffing data into a packet, multiple copies of it, so that if part of it gets knocked out by a static burst or something like that, it can get picked up by another copy of it further back in the message. Okay, and that's why, you know, like Q6530 is sending your call sign in the signal report for 30 freaking seconds, over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Okay, and sooner or later, the software can assemble from different parts of the message, what the 12 characters that it took you 30 seconds to send. So it's basically, that's the components of it. Okay, it was those 4 pieces of it that make this thing work. If you're happy with that, you can go get some coffee and operate the HF station. But what I'm going to talk about for the rest of the session is how these get implemented in the different programs.
So don't.
You're presuming, by the way, that I know how to answer questions past my level of my presentation. It's not necessarily true, but I'll try.
Point. I think another one would be that everything needs to work on a synchronized clock.
That's true in many cases. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff is synchronous. FP8, everybody knows, is synchronous. Okay? So it knows that a certain character should happen at a specific time. That's why your clock has to be accurate in FP8.
Yeah.
As opposed to packet, which I was talking about last month, which is asynchronous. And if you remember in packet, there is a specific bit pattern at the beginning of a packet and at the end of a packet. So it knows, okay, we're waiting, we're listening. Oh, there's a packet coming in, not at a specific time, but it has to be able to recognize the beginning of the packet, and there's specific characters at the beginning of the packet to do it. FT8, you don't have to do that. You wait for the clock, and then you start listening, and that's the beginning of your packet. So, yes.
And that's how it knows which character it needs at each slot.
Right. The fact that it's timed makes a huge difference, because it can use time as a synchronization thing, whereas in packet radio, you can't, because it's asynchronous. So yeah, that's a good point. Good, I'm glad I wasn't a question.
I was forming the question, but.
Okay, this was kind of interesting. This is talking about the signal to noise ratio that's necessary for different types of transmission. So if you get down to here, JT65 can go down to minus 24 dB. FT8 is a little less sensitive. CW about 12, minus 12. Single sideband, you got to be above the noise, right? Because you can't hear, you can't copy with your ear. Signal is below the noise. But what's the difference between plus 10 dB and minus 24 dB? Basically, 10,000 times. All right, you know, it's what. So. That's like taking your amplifier, multiplying it by 10,000. And one of the things that I read in one of the articles is this opens a whole new world of amateur radio. Because, you know, guys with 5 watts can work all over the world. You don't need to be Tony Starr with a huge tower and, you know, kilowatt and stuff like that. You know, and when we're working moon bounce, we don't need the 4x8. 2 meter arrays that the guys used to use back in the 80s with 2000 watts, we can work it with a 2.4 meter dish and 200 watts, and we'd still bounce signals off the moon because we're using transmissions that can receive like this versus having to work CW or having to work sideband.
So, okay. So John, what happens if they're hypothetical and never, I guess, would happen? But what would happen if there were no noise? How would this system work if there were no noise? What would it
really great?
Well, I'm saying, what would it throw out? How would it process the signal?
I think it would basically say there's no noise, and it'll just process. All there is a signal. There doesn't have to be noise. It's just a limit. It's just eliminating the noise that's there. Make sense? Anybody else have a explanation on that? If there's no noise, there's nothing to throw out.
Necessity for it, though.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So this is basically
something interesting to put to the test.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you just set up
Faraday cage.
Yeah, set up a Faraday cage and try it. But this is kind of making the comparison between what was before Joe Taylor and what is after Joe Taylor. Okay, and I think, you know, this is a really interesting point. This is basically showing you what you can do, you know, and it's not so much that, you know, you're running 10,000 watts running sideband. It's you're running 10 milliwatts in whisper and you're getting to Australia from Mike's house. You know, that's the kind of thing that it's given us.
10,000 watts.
Yeah. So this gets into bandwidth and SNR. It uses Boltzmann's constant, which I think I remember from... Let's see, first semester, junior year. Carl, when did you have it? Thermodynamics?
It was college anyway. Yeah.
And it's basically talking about the Boltzmann constant is a fixed measure, how much thermal energy exists per degree of temperature. So that's all I was able to look up with Boltzmann's constant. It threw Boltzmann's constant in. I didn't do that. I haven't even known that in 50 years. But basically what it's talking about is how wide is the bandwidth and what's the sensitivity. So you're talking whisper, which is a 6 hertz bandwidth. We'll talk about that a little later. Minus 28 dB sensitivity, whereas you get up to single sideband voice, you've got a 2.5 kilohertz bandwidth and plus 10 dB. Okay, it's basically showing what I was talking about before. The narrower your signal, the more noise you can reject. Okay, so that's kind of what the point is here. So this gets into FT8.